Welcome to the State of Sound podcast, produced by the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum, a companion series to the blockbuster exhibit, The State of Sound, a world of music from Illinois, now playing at the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum.
Singer REO Speedwagon, welcome aboard to the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum State of Sound Studio.
Wow, what an honor and a pleasure to be here. I've visited a few presidential museums over the years. I kind of dig them. So I'm honored to be part of this. It's very cool.
One of our longtime folks tells me a few years back when you were performing one of your many concerts in Springfield, you actually made it to the museum one day before one of your concerts.
As a matter of fact, I did. I saw President Lincoln's top hat, among other things, and I did. I toured the place. As a matter of fact, it must have been 1969-ish, I took a road trip. I grew up in Chicago, so I just took a road trip, and I didn't know exactly where I was going to go. I was by myself. It's one of those times where you want to just be kind of alone with your thoughts. And I found myself on the way to Springfield, Illinois, and I visited the museum back then. And I also drove outside of town, and there's a little place near where Abraham Lincoln's birthplace, the little cabin, and it's called Prairie Run. I don't even know if it's still there, but there was that music pavilion called the Illinois Opry. And
Petersburg, that's New Salem, where he came as a young man from Kentucky, right?
New Salem, that's it. And so I just happened to be there. I sat down in the pavilion because there was a band that was going to be playing that night, and they were rehearsing, doing their sound check, I guess. And it was the first time that I heard live country music, and I was so inspired. I came home and wrote a song called The Ballad of the Illinois Opry, which actually appeared on an REO Speedwagon album.
Found myself heading down towards Springfield. The last sign said it was 12 miles west.
So I feel a soulful connection, you know, as an Illinois boy, proud of my Illinois roots, proud to be part of the Illinois music scene. And so there you go. I do feel, a soulful connection to Abraham Lincoln. I mean, he was one of the great presidents of our country's history. And, so proud Illinois boy you're talking to here.
All right. Of course, Kevin, REO Speedwagon, a great rock and roll band in the same sense. And the band's roots date back to the mid-60s with Neil Dowdy, who remains with the band today, and Adam Gratzer, who met up at the University of Illinois at Champaign-Urbana. But I want to start our conversation back in the spring of 1981.
And I'm gonna keep on.
Years ago, about right now, when the band was, by any measure, Kevin, the hottest band in rock and roll. High Infidelity had been released and was huge. As I understand it, you knew early on that High Infidelity was going to be a huge success. When did you know that?
Well, you know, you never know for sure. You know, there's so many factors that that come into play. The stars have to be lined up just perfectly. But I will say that during the recording of that record, there was a closeness among the band members. There was, all of our lives were, our personal lives were in similar disarray, as the case may be, and so that even brought us closer, and it caused the songs that we wrote for that record to kind of be coming from a similar viewpoint, similar state of mind. And so the record took on a personality of its own. And, you know, we didn't plan it to be a concept album. If we tried to plan it to be a concept album, we would never have been able to do it, because we're, just a bunch of knuckleheads from, you know, from Illinois, right? But it kind of became a an accidental concept album. And so when you feel that kind of closeness within the band, and the songs were, they were just soulful songs, and they were songs about things that people go through in real life, and people heard that music and immediately became attached to it. We, because we played some of the songs before the album came out, when no one had even heard them, because we were touring, because we had a survive, and we were getting audience reactions to songs like "Keep on Loving You" and "Don't Let Him Go" and "Take It on the Run," that were, you know, you would have thought that people had already heard them and they were already hits. So they, that gave us a feeling that that we had something. And, you know, then of course the stars lined up in many ways. And yeah, that that album was a juggernaut. I think it's the definition of a juggernaut. But it was an amazing time, and it was 40 years ago right now. Seems like a long time ago, and it seems like yesterday at the same time.
It seems like yesterday for me. That's when I was first starting out as a baby disc jockey in high school, and I remember those days well. And the title of the album, obviously a play on words, calls to mind the unofficial credo of rock music: sex, drugs, and rock and roll. What led the band to decide on the name High Infidelity? It's a clever name for an album.
Well, thank you. I was on my way into the studio, driving down the Ventura Freeway here in Los Angeles. I had a convertible. The top was down. I had a rough mix of "Don't Let Him Go" Frank through my car sound system, and all I can tell you is it felt like that title dropped out of the sky into my lap. I just thought of it, and I immediately knew that that was going to be the title of our new album. I also knew that it had the potential of being controversial because of what you just explained. And, you know, when I told the guys in the band about it, when I got to the studio, everybody's jaw dropped. They're like, wait a minute, can we name our album High Infidelity? And but it was just, it just had to be. It was like the music named itself. And, one of the things that I thought of to soften it a bit was change the word high from H-I-G-H to just H-I, like high. so that kind of made it feel a little more warm and cozy to me. But it just worked, and you know, that you can't deny the catchiness of it, and the controversial nature of it didn't seem to get in the way of the album's success. So I guess it was like,
the right time, right name at the right time. Now, one of the really impressive items on display in our State of Sound exhibit is the Diamond Sales Award that recognizes High Infidelity's, as you said, you know, just the phenomenal success, 10 million albums sold. What does that award mean to you and to the rest of the band?
Oh, man, Joe, that was just it was humbling. It was a source of pride. It's like, you know, we kind of looked at ourselves and went, because it, you know, what a phenomenon. I mean, High Infidelity was a phenomenon, let's face it, in that particular time. So the band made such a giant leap in popularity, and in, you know, we were always pretty, we had done really well in Illinois, and we spread it a little bit to the neighboring states, but High Infidelity kind of put us on the map nationally and internationally. It just, you know, everything just kind of exploded. And that little trophy that's on display there at the Presidential Museum in Illinois encapsulates all of that. So, you know, when I look at that, because I've got one sitting on my mantle here, you know, and it's, you know, I don't dwell on it, but every once in a while I walk past it and you kind of pinch yourself and go, wow, did that really happen? Or was that just something I dreamed? Because basically every dream that I had as a kid starting to take guitar lessons, it all came true and then some, you know. So it was pretty amazing. Now, of course, you know, with anything, there's also the flip side. And I'm in the midst of writing a book as we speak. I'm about 4.5 years into it. And I tell the story of, you know, of the flip side of the humongous success, because, you know, I had convinced myself that as soon as that all my problems and all my insecurities and all my issues would suddenly disappear if the band hit it big. And of course that was a false way of thinking about things, because that's not what happened. So it's, you know, it's like anything in life, you know, with anything that happens to you, there's always the other side of the coin that you have to deal with. And it was good for me, because in realizing that it wasn't all wrapped up in the success of the band, it forced me and caused me to, you know, to look inside and to figure out some things that I needed to figure out. So in the long run, High Infidelity was just an amazing experience on every level. And, you know, but you, again, you have to learn from every experience. And I learned plenty about it, about myself through it. And now here we are. We're, you know, as soon as the COVID threat starts to dissipate, and it is finally, I think there's light at the end of the tunnel, and REO Speedwagon is looking at getting back on the road later this year. And with luck, we will be playing a show in Effingham, Illinois this coming July. And so fingers crossed, and everybody get your vaccinations, and we'll be back.
You're listening to the State of Sound podcast. I'm Joe Crane, and I have the pleasure of speaking with REO Speedwagon frontman Kevin Cronin. Now, of course, you had a couple of starts and stops as REO's lead singer around, 1972, 73, before he finally came on board with the band permanently in 1976. At the time when you came on board, you had more of a background in folk rock, and the band was kind of, you know, a hard-driving rock and roll band. So as you and the late Gary Richrath emerged as the driving forces for the band, how were you able to mesh your folk style with that hard-driving rock sound?
Well, you know, that was definitely the challenge. You know, when Gary and I met accidentally, and again, I tell the whole crazy story in the book, but Gary was from just outside of Peoria down in Pekin, Illinois, so he was kind of a small town, kind of a, you know, not quite a farm boy, but he had that, he had a country music background that most people aren't aware of. He learned guitar from his uncle Leroy, who was a, you know, kind of a Buck Owens and the Buckaroos kind of guy, you know. So Gary had that kind of country folk thing, you know, at his core, but he kind of, as you say, made his name as the, you know, the hard rock and guitar slinger from REO Speedwagon. He had a presence that was just phenomenal. I mean, when I first saw the band, I couldn't take my eyes off the guy. He just had this sound and this way of playing the guitar that was amazing. And I feel like he is has always been underrated and underappreciated as a guitarist. But you know, guys who play the guitar, they know who Gary Richrath is. And so that was a challenge that because I always liked rock and roll. I was a Beatles guy, and so it took. I mean, that's kind of why things didn't quite work out the first time around. We couldn't figure out a way to keep that mutual respect going. It was almost like it had to be one way or the other, and that wasn't going to work for one of us. And you know, Gary'd been in the band longer than me, so I was the one who you know was kind of asked to leave, to put it politely. But you know, the band went through a couple of albums without me, and I think. And my solo career didn't quite explode the way I hoped it would. And so when we got back together, there was a little bit more of a mutual respect there with Gary and I, and we worked things through. And as I said earlier, the stars lined up in High Infidelity. That was kind of where the balance between Gary's thing and my thing kind of just, the balance was there. And, you know, I had Keep On Loving You, he had Take It On The Run. And those two songs were just a 1-2 punch that sent the whole album into the stratosphere. And the beauty of it was that all the albums that preceded it. You know, REOTWO, You Can Tune a Piano But You Can't Tune a Fish, Nine Lives, those three records, which had all done okay. Suddenly, you know, a lot of people were hearing REO Speedwagon for the first time with High Infidelity, and all those albums came back on the charts and ended up going platinum plus. So it was, that made the year 1981 even that much more special.
You take it on the run, baby. If that's the way you want it, baby, then I don't want you.
Absolutely. But unfortunately, as you mentioned a little while ago, there, you know, with the success, there's the one side of the coin, but there's also some other issues and pressures that come up on the other side of the coin. And unfortunately, that collaboration between you and Gary ended around 1989 when he left the band. I would imagine that just as those different approaches could have a positive impact on the creative process, Kevin, those differences also contributed to the parting of ways. Looking back, do you have some second thoughts on how that working relationship ultimately played out?
Well, you know, it was, you know, when you have a relationship that, relies so much on striking a balance, if things get out of balance in on either side, it has an effect on the partnership. And as I said, you know, the stars were really close during You Can Tune a Piano But You Can't Tune a Fish. We hit it in High Infidelity. We were really close on Wheels Are Turning. And by 1987, Life As We Know It, things just got out of balance. And I love Gary with all my being. And I owe him so much for having, you know, seeing me as a, you know, when I was just a young folk singer in Chicago, and recognizing something in me that no one else had. Alan left the band after the 1987 tour, and it didn't take long for things to start unraveling. Alan was really a big part of the glue, you know, because Gary and I, as I said, we're always looking for balance. Alan was really good at helping us to find that balance. You know, when he left, I think, you know, he didn't mean it to happen this way, but his kind of even keel, level headed, he's a really smart guy. And you know, so you take one piece out of a puzzle, and suddenly the puzzle, other pieces start, you know, moving around as well. I wish that, you know, I'm sad that Gary wasn't around to experience the great resurgence that REO Speedwagon experienced, starting in about 1995, and it goes on to this day. That music just stuck to people's ribs, and you know, it was a shame, because, you know, Gary was a big part of creating that music. So yeah, it was unfortunate, and it makes me sad when I think about it, honestly, and especially with Gary having passed away. You know, you'd like to see yourself riding off into the sunset together, you know, getting together on the front porch and talking about old times. And, you know, but, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. And it is worth noting that Gary didn't completely go away. He did rejoin the band on a few occasions to hop on stage for an encore song or two, most notably at that 2013 Tornado Relief concert in Bloomington. So I guess it seems fitting that the final performance between you and Gary would be a benefit to help people back home in Illinois.
That was, I mean, there was poetic justice in that, Joe, for sure. Gary had just, he'd been living in Los Angeles for all those years. And I heard that he had moved back to Peoria, and he actually, he and his wife bought a house on a hill, you know, and that he was going to be moving and resettling back in Peoria, which I thought would be really great for him. And then coincidentally, when the Washington, Illinois tornado hit, and we kind of, you know, all the bands that are in your exhibit there at the museum came together, and we put on this amazing benefit concert. It was just such a phenomenal thing, and it felt so good to be coming back to Illinois and helping out our home state, because that's what bands are supposed to do. You know, if something happens in Texas, well, ZZ Top and, you know, something, you know what I mean? So you gotta take care of your own, you know, and if everyone does that, then it keeps the whole thing together. And the fact that Gary happened to be there and was available to come and join us, that was, he came out for the final song of that concert, Riding the Storm Out, which is a song that he wrote and was really REO Speedwagon's first notable song. That was actually the last time I saw him. And luckily we had connected over a couple of years before that. I'm very fortunate that when he passed, we were on fairly good terms. We had reconnected and again, you know, this is the Reader's Digest version. The whole story is, if I ever finish this book, people will be able to read what the details, you know?
Yeah. You talk about LA earlier, of course, that the time the band was forming their home base in LA back in the late 70s as REO Speedwagon was starting to really take off. And about that time, you're in need of a new bass guitarist. It would have been very easy to sign up any number of talented musicians in the Southern California rock scene at the time. But instead, the band reached back to its roots and brought Champaign native Bruce Hall on board. Bruce, of course, still with the band today. Was that a conscious effort to go back to Illinois to find a new bass guitar player?
Well, I'll tell you, I met Bruce back when I first joined the band in 1972 at a party in Alan Gratcher's apartment. I was sitting at the piano just tinkering around, and all of a sudden I see this big blonde dude sitting on the piano bench next to me singing harmony. And, it was a kind of a nice blend. There was a connection there, you know, and so Bruce was always on my radar. You know, I used to go see him with his band where he was the lead singer. They used to play at the Red Lion in Champaign all the time. And so I was a Bruce Hall fan from way back. So when Greg Philbin left the band, to me, it was a no-brainer. The first call went to Bruce, and he was on a plane a couple of days later, and he's been with us ever since. And he and I are every musical adventure that I've gone on, whether in REO Speedwagon, some side projects that I did, Bruce has always been with me. He's just a tremendous musician and just a good guy, and it was a no-brainer.
All right. Now, of course, our exhibit, State of Sound, A World of Music from Illinois, a celebration of music and musicians from Illinois. Kevin Cronin, how does Illinois continue to influence you as an artist?
Well, I think, I think we're all influenced by our upbringings, by the way we were raised, by our surroundings, by the people we interacted with. And, I don't think I left the state of Illinois until I was, in high school, except to go up to Michigan for a vacation once in a while. The idea of moving to California was something that I thought was just a temporary thing. We're just going to go out there because the best recording studios were in LA. I never expected to end up here full time. I'm an Illinois boy, born and bred. There's a certain mentality that I think everyone in Illinois kind of shares. And it's, if you boil it down, it's like, it's a responsibility. It's a work ethic. It's the idea of loyalty to friends and family. And then when the weekend comes, let's have some fun. So I think, again, it's balance. It's a balance between hard work and loyal dedication and being able to, let loose and have a good time when the time is right. And I think Illinois just being right in the heart of the country, I think that, again, I get, as we're talking here, we keep coming back to the idea of balance. And I think Illinois is kind of the fulcrum of America. We're right there, man. So I feel it was a great privilege to have been born in Illinois. All of us could have been born anywhere in the world. And there's never been a moment where I have wished that I grew up somewhere else. I've always been a proud Illinois boy. And as REO Speedwagon tours around the world, we share that message. I mean, I talk about Illinois all the time. I talk about, you know, being from Chicago. I talk about the band being from Champaign, the home of the University of Illinois. And, you know, we had a Chicago boy, a Peoria boy, an East St. Louis boy. You know, Neil was from the, so he was from the southern part of the state, or the southeast, the southwestern part of the state. Bruce from Champaign. I would not wish to have been born and bred anywhere else than in the great state of Illinois.
Well, over the years, of course, REO Speedwagon has done countless tours. Several tours, in fact, with fellow Illinois bands Styx in Chicago, recorded 16 studio albums, 7 live albums, 15 compilation albums, even a REO Speedwagon Christmas album, not to mention releasing an online video game a few years ago, appearing on the Netflix series Ozark just last year. Beside the book that you mentioned a little while ago that you're in the process of writing, is there anything else you or the band still want to accomplish?
That's a really good question, Joe. I mean, being home for the past 14 months, that's the longest I've been off tour in my adult life. And so it gives you a chance to kind of reflect and think about life and what you want to do. And I can say that most of my bucket list items, I never had a bucket list, but if I did, it'd be pretty empty at this point, because I've been so fortunate that our music has just, as I said earlier, just stuck to people's ribs, and people, starting with the people of Illinois, they gave us our foundation, and without them, we would have never accomplished anything, because we always, as we struggled through the 70s, with missteps and albums that didn't turn out the way we wanted them. And we always had that solid foundation of the people of Illinois who were cheering us on. I'm really excited about finishing this book. The book is, it started by accident, and it just kind of, the way it unfolded was that it kind of follows my song. My songs kind of create my life story, as well as the story of REO Speedwagon. So I'm also planning to put together, I'm in the process of putting together a musical companion piece for the book, which, I've never made a solo album. And so this would be probably the closest thing to a solo album, but it kind of just goes along with the book. I'm looking forward to doing an audio version of the book where it'll be my voice, which sounds like fun. The band is going to be going out next. We're doing a bunch of dates, hopefully in the second part of 2021, and then in 2022 we have a massive tour planned with, and we'll be announcing the lineup and all the details when everything is solidified. But I'm looking forward to a big tour in 2022 with a brand new set list and hopefully some surprises for people that have seen us a number of times over the years. We want to give them something brand new. Having not played out in 15 months, we got some rust to deal with, so we've got a couple of weeks of production rehearsals coming up, and it's exciting. It's also a little scary, I'll be honest with you, but I think once we all get together and strap on our guitars and start jamming, hopefully it will be more like riding a bike than falling off a bike. That's my hope. And then we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens from there.
Well, I know you and the rest of REO Speedwagon chomping at the bit to get back out on the road, and I know your legions of fans would love to see that. In the meantime, we sure appreciate your time. Kevin Cronin, REO Speedwagon's lead singer, for spending some time with us here on the State of Sound podcast.
My pleasure, man. I'm on behalf of the whole band, we are just tickled to death to be part of this exhibit, and as I said, to be native Illinois boys. We always will be.
Well, I hope this summer when you make some dates out to our part of the country, you have a little time to squeeze in and come see the exhibit and hang out for a little bit here in Springfield.
That'd be awesome. How long is this exhibit planning to run?
Mid-January of 2022, so you got plenty of time.
Nice. That sounds good. Well, I know we have a date in Effingham coming up in July, and if there's a day off on either side of it, I'm gonna be there for sure. So
yeah, just give us a call, and we'll roll out the red carpet for you. All right. Well, Kevin, thank you again. Thank you so much for your time, and have a great weekend, my friend.
This has been the State of Sound podcast produced by the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum. To hear other episodes and more information about the exhibit, The State of Sound, A World of Music from Illinois, visit musicfromillinois.com.